Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to the Atlanta Podcast. I am your host, Matt B. Davis, and it has been a minute, but I look forward to bringing you many more tales from the ATL. Really excited to bring this to you. Today's show is with Greg Green of The Masquerade, and how this came to be is my pal Chad connected me and said, hey, they're opening this new restaurant at The Masquerade. We want to promote it. We're excited. It's a big relaunch, if you will. And as you're going to learn, I am an old head, as they say. I've been going to The Masquerade for many, many years. So if you're an old head like me, you have lots and lots of great memories from those late 80s and 90s shows. And The Masquerade in its new location, although now it's been there a few years, is still putting on a ton of great shows. You can check their calendar online, obviously. And Alter is now open. When we recorded this, they were still building it out, and he showed me. I did a quick little tour. I'll probably post some of those photos. But at the time, it hadn't been finished yet. But I was really excited because I did not know Greg at all before this, and it turns out he's been there for as long as I've been going to shows. So a lot of fun Atlanta music memories. Let's chat to Greg Green. Away we go. All right, we'll start with the easy one. Where did you where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Snellville, Gwinnett County.
Okay.
25 miles east of here, east of downtown.
Okay.
At that time, it was a quaint little country town, and now it's not.
What's it like now?
Kind of a standard metropolitan suburb, you know, much bigger.
Right.
All the chains.
You can put it a little bit closer to here. And where'd you go to high school?
South Gwinnett.
Okay.
In Snellville.
And at what year did you graduate? High school, that is.
I hate to say it, but 1982.
It's okay. You can say it. So I graduated in 1990, so you are older than me. But when I saw this, when I got emailed from Chad, he said, big news about The Masquerade, blah, blah, blah. And then I looked you up, and I think you've been here as long as I've been coming to shows here. What year did you start?
I'm sure that I have. 1991.
Okay. Well, I think you just missed the first show because I'm a dork. When I was a young man, I actually kept things on a list, and I had the list from, it looks like I found these pictures. And the only reason I have these pictures is because I posted them on Facebook 15 years ago, and I know where to find them. So my first show, if you're curious, was Van Halen at the Omni in April of 1986.
Nice.
With BTO opening. I don't know if you remember BTO. You remember BTO?
Of course.
So the first show I came to here, it looks like most of the shows back then were at the Omni, which is hilarious to me because obviously the Omni's no longer with us. But it was actually the Ramones in 1990 was the very first show I saw at The Masquerade. But then they came back again.
Right.
In 91. So
I was there for the second one, missed the first one.
Okay. And what were you doing in the world as a whatever 20 something back then?
So I was finishing school at Georgia State. I was tending bar at the Little Five Points Pub, which is now the Corner Tavern in Little Five Points.
Okay.
And got a job as a bartender The Masquerade.
But it was called something else for a while, wasn't it? Wasn't it The Point or something?
No, The Point was different. Same corner, but The Point was kind of across the little plaza on the same side of the street.
What about, we're really going back here, I know, for younger listeners, sorry, older listeners will be thrilled. Wasn't there a play, wasn't there like Nine Lives or something?
Nine Lives is the same spot. It became Nine Lives after the Little Five Points pub
closed down. I can't believe I remember these things. Yeah. But anyhow, so you're tending bar.
Yep. While working at the Little Five Points pub, I was involved in booking local bands and helping put together shows. So after I started at the Masquerade as a bartender, there came the opportunity to begin doing the same thing. And the rest is my history.
And you just never left.
And just never left. Yet it's kind of been my entire adult career.
When has there been anyone that you saw either way back then, going all the way back like we're talking about, or even in the last 10 years or 15 years that you got to see sort of on the come up that you thought, well, clearly these guys or gal like is going to, it has it and we'll probably see a lot more of them?
I am so bad at remembering shows from long ago. We have done so many. I mean, there's...
But I'm just saying somebody that you remember thinking, like nobody knows who these guys are yet, just maybe locally, but they're gonna hit the rocket ship to fame, as it were.
Back in the Little Five Points pub days, there were bands like Widespread Panic.
Oh, yeah.
The Indigo Girls, Follow For Now, which featured David Ryan Harris, who's a big deal now.
Right.
And they all became hugely famous.
I feel like Follow For Now was a thing, too, though, right?
They were. They got signed. They were part of that first wave of the Black Rock Coalition when there was Living Color and
right.
such.
Right.
They didn't really make it, but David Ryan Harris is doing quite well.
Well, I know everybody thinks they grew up in the best time, but revisiting this old list, and I was hearing something about some movies that came out in the 80s, and I thought, it really was a different time. I mean, if you look at just like the summer of, say, you know, if you look at the years that I was in high school, late 80s, early 90s, I'm not sure you'll find a better time because you had the older rockers still doing stuff, right? Like the Stones were still doing stuff and the Who did a reunion tour, and you had all these amazing bands. I mean, Living Color, we worshiped them, right? And when you're young, you kind of don't know that, like, you might just get two records out of these guys, right? Guns N' Roses, you know, we didn't know, like, this is the greatest thing that's ever going to happen to rock music, and we're only going to get two or three records. I mean, we stayed up all night. I'm pretty sure it was Turtles when Use Your Illusion 1 and 2 came out. Do you remember that?
I think it was... I do, yeah. I used to stand in line at the Turtles on Memorial Drive,
right,
just outside the perimeter, freezing my ass off and waiting on the tickets to go on sale.
Yeah, I got to say, I'm actually a little disappointed that we don't get the tickets anymore, because that's always a fun thing, right? You have the big book, or some people make a big frame of all the tickets. And if I take my kids to the movies or a concert, it's just all on the phone. I mean, I sound like 100 years old, but I kind of don't care.
Well, that's one thing that we've always offered in our box office, even as the real ticket outlets disappeared from Kroger and Walmart and places that they used to be. We still sell physical tickets here, and there are a number of the ticket collectors that you're referencing that make the trip down and come into the box office just to get that physical ticket.
Well, God bless you for doing that, for appreciating us old folks.
I'm sure at some point the ticket stock will be phased out, but until then, we'll keep on.
What's the current color? Is it blue? I remember it was just blue and reddish.
No, it's just kind of white with red and black print.
Right.
Yeah.
I remember
we'll get you one before you go. We'll print you a commemorative ticket.
Oh, please. That would be amazing. I would love one. So another memory I have of, I mean, obviously, when you say the Masquerade to anybody, you know, my age or a little bit younger, we think about the, you know, the Excelsior Mill there, which for those listening is now, what do you call that park even?
Old Fourth Ward Park. And that building, I think, is called North and Line.
Yeah. So it's the backside of Ponce, essentially.
Right.
And that spot where my friends played local shows there as well. And so that was always a big deal. This weird memory I have is we wanted to see House of Pain. whatever year that was, 91, 92. I forget who they were playing with. But we didn't have any money or it sold out. And so we just drank in the parking lot and listened. You know, we drank in the parking lot and smoked pot probably with whoever was there. And then they all went in and, you know, you could hear it good enough.
Yeah.
Right?
That happened so much until eventually when that parking lot developed into a park and they put the apartment complexes and stuff around it, then those apartment neighbors weren't having that.
Right.
So we had to do a lot of soundproofing and insulating and stuff to prevent that. But during the time you're talking about, there were big exhaust fans on the side of the building facing that parking lot, and that's where the sound came from. So,
well, speaking of exhaust fans, you got to bring this a little bit closer, by the way. Speaking of exhaust fans, I do remember that first Ramon show, maybe the second one, we left it like wiped out, like drenched in sweat. We didn't know that we were going to essentially, that's like a workout, just jumping around for 2 hours. And I don't even mean the moshing per se, because the Ramones didn't really attract that moshing crowd per se. It's just a lot of jumping up and down. And we were like wiped out. And so I don't know, like, how did you try to keep that place cool or hot or?
Well, it had air conditioning. It had a big water-cooled chiller outside. But when you put that many bodies into such a tight space, you know, there's no cooling it other than to try to suck the heat out.
So how many bodies, what's a sellout in that? Was that Heaven? I can't remember.
Yeah, that was Heaven, and that was about 1,000 people.
So that's it, 1,000 folks.
Yeah.
You probably crammed in 1,100 maybe on a good day.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
And then describe the other two rooms for people.
First, I'm going to elaborate a little bit about that on Heaven. In the early days, the bar area, which was to the rear of the room, was fenced off, so that only those of age could get into that area. So if you had 1,000 folks and it was a predominantly younger crowd, then they were all on that side, which kind of shrunk the room up a little bit and was interesting at times.
Right.
The other rooms, though, were labeled the same as we are now, which is Hell, which was originally a dance club that featured mostly gothy, industrial, alternative dance music.
We called it goth back then. I don't know anybody uses that term anymore.
They still exist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure those people exist. I don't know if they just use that term anymore. It was very Nine Inch Nails and like that kind of thing.
Right. Who performed there a number of occasions.
Right.
And the third space was Purgatory. And at the old building, it was initially a lounge, pinball machine, game room, kind of chill out area that you could retreat from the chaos of the show. And eventually a stage was built in there and it became another performance area.
And how many fit in each of those spots?
I think Hell was about 500 and Purgatory maybe 250.
I just remembered another memory I have. I hope these aren't too lame for you, because I'm sure people have a lot of masquerade stories for you. My friend's band were playing, and they got to open for one of the Kiss cover bands. Now, nowadays, oh my God, if you have a band with one record, you got a cover band. But back then, really, there wasn't a lot. And I think there were only two or three big Kiss ones, and they were playing. The Kiss cover band was headlining that night. And so we were backstage while my friends were getting ready, watching these guys put on their makeup, and we were a little starstruck. Even though they weren't that famous to us, they were. Anyway, that was just another pleasant. I think it was Strutter.
You might find it interesting to know that Strutter, the band, still exists.
Let's go.
Still tour and played here last year.
Get out of here.
Same guys.
Get out of here. Are they older or younger than you?
Probably a little older.
Wow.
But, you know, under the cover of that makeup.
Who can tell?
Who cares?
All right. Well, good for you, Strutter, if you're listening to this. I'm glad you're still going at it. But, yeah, we were very excited to watch them. Do their, you know, put, especially like the Gene guy puts on his boots and
sure,
very exciting stuff. Glad to know Strutters. I hope they're like, hey guys, we were doing this before everybody was doing this, which I mean, I think it's probably begs a pretty good question is, do you think, cause there was always, what you would call retro, right? So in the '80s, it was like, hey, the Temps and Tops are playing or the Beach Boys came around. And there was always this like instant kind of nostalgia thing. And so now all the 90s band, the 80s bands came and maybe they're still doing it. Now there's a lot of 90s stuff. And obviously it's an easier ticket to sell, but this idea of it's essentially just come and hear the radio, right? Like that's kind of what's happened now, right?
Yeah. There's a, there's a retro movement in lots of the genres, and a lot of those people still tour. We still do shows with Gary Newman.
Get out of here.
He's coming up. Yep, April.
How are these guys still alive?
Peter Murphy tours regularly.
Wow.
So,
but maybe they just weren't that much older than me when I was 17. It just felt like they were.
Right.
Because if someone's in their 20s when you're 17, it feels pretty old.
Yeah.
But they're actually not that much older than me.
Rock and roll might just keep you alive.
it very well might. It seems like we are always in sort of this crisis of, is there no more rock bands, though? They seem to always be asking that question, right?
But they're... inevitably are.
Right.
There's, you know, tons of great young rock bands coming up, touring, following in the footsteps of, you know, the ones we've been talking about.
So when the move happened to come here, do you know kind of the story of, we know we're going to lose this spot on Old Fourth Ward?
Yeah, so we knew we were going to lose that spot in Old Fourth Ward. So we started looking for a new location and probably looked at every empty warehouse building in the city and eventually settled on a spot in West Midtown and got to the point of having the plans done, signing a lease, all that. And what we didn't know initially was that a residential developer had bought up a bunch of the land around it. And once he realized that there was a rock club about to drop right in the middle of this neighborhood development that he was planning, things kind of turned south. And he was able to keep us from opening that spot. That kind of left us in a lurch. And at that time, the city of Atlanta owned this property at Underground Atlanta. And they said, hey, we've got some spaces down here. If you need somewhere to live temporarily, come take a look and see if there's anything that could be outfitted to suit your needs. And we did, and we're still here 7 years later.
Was it imperative that you always had the three levels? Like, we got to keep that? Or like, well, if we can, we will?
That's our theme and our identity. So we wanted to keep it, and it was our intention at the spot we didn't get, and it's what we did here.
So I guess what's the day-to-day like, I guess? Because you're going to, I guess, field so many calls from so many bands or activities or thing or events or so. What's kind of the day to day here?
So we've got a pretty sizable office and staff here. We've got a big operations team. We've got a marketing team. We've got a booking team. I participate in all of those. We generally have between, I don't know, we might have 2, 3, or 7 shows in a day. We not only operate in our three rooms here, but we promote shows at Tabernacle, Eastern, Coca-Cola Roxy, The Earl, Center Stage. You know, we do them all over the place. So it's very busy, very hectic.
Wait, so explain that to me.
In addition to being a venue, we're also a concert promotions company.
And what's that concert promotions company called?
Masquerade Presents. No, we get so many opportunities to...
Because like I've heard of like shows. Zero Mile, and I've heard of a couple of these other ones. I just didn't know that was y'all's thing too.
Well...
is it because you have the relationship with the artist?
It is. We view ourselves as artists, an artist incubator.
Okay.
Because we have these three concert halls of our own of various sizes. We can start people out when they're drawing 100, 200... fans early in their career and move them up to our 600 capacity room and follow that to our 1400 capacity room. And if they're continuing to grow their career, a lot of them find it important to keep us along for the ride, you know, to the next step.
Right.
So that leads us to doing shows at, you know, the larger places. And after 35 years of this, we've established a reputation in the music community and the booking agencies as I don't know, being someone worth continuing to work with throughout their careers.
Right. And so the move wasn't, I don't know, as difficult as you thought or about as difficult as you thought or
it turned out much better than we thought. We definitely had intended it to be a temporary move coming here. At that time, we didn't know how people would react to being downtown, if
right.
they would think it was dangerous or scary or difficult, and we were able to overcome that perception and get people to come in.
Well, I think let's talk about underground. So I guess give people sort of the 70s, 80s history of underground, because some people might not know at all. I mean, I grew up here, so I understand it. But
70s, 80s, it was a big touristy entertainment district. There were bars, nightclubs, restaurants, Atlanta memorabilia, tourist type stores, shoe stores, all that kind of stuff. It was owned by the city of Atlanta. And I don't know the circumstances, but I think became a big financial drain. I don't think it was profitable. And so eventually, after that time, they sold it to a private developer. Kind of here we are.
Right, but it kind of was empty.
When we moved in, it was completely empty in this outdoor Kenny's Alley area. There were still some shops inside the underground mall. The vacancy is what made it easy for us to move into. But now it's revitalizing. It's kind of becoming a hip artistic hub. There are a lot of artist gallery spaces inside the mall. They throw parties. There's food truck lunches. Yeah, lots going on.
Yeah, because even when I moved, so I had left for a while. When I came back in 05, 07 area, I remember I had seen some stuff with the ACVB, and they were like, oh, we're trying to be in the underground back. It seems like they kind of always were, but I feel like what it sounds like you're saying is like, if you guys give it kind of an anchor, then it's like, okay, let's build kind of around that. There's at least this one major thing that events are happening all the time.
That's my perception of exactly what happened.
Well, I'm like a genius then. I'm funny. I have been to one show here. Because I don't go – that's the thing is like when I look at this list of all these shows I went to, first of all, again, it's just amazing the time we lived in because it's – I mean just to amuse you and, again, I think you'll appreciate. So these were obviously – we're all over the place, not just Masquerade. But if you listen to like, you know, a certain area of time, so Clapton, Chuck Berry, George Carlin, Robert Plant, Living Colour, Paul Simon, Sting, the Ramones, ZZ Top – Replacements. This is like 6 months of shows, right?
Sure.
All fucking Hall of Famers, right? Van Halen, the first Lollapalooza, very proud of that. Hall & Oates, Sting, Tom Petty, Allman Brothers, De La Soul, Metallica. Like, this is such an amazing, amazing time, right? I'm just like, literally, these are all Hall of Famers, right? Playing, like, hey, who are we going to see this week? We were either seeing my friends, or we were going to Lakewood, or we were going to... So anyway... But when I look at those lists, I think, what a time to be alive. And then I thought, wow, did I have extra money, right?
Sure.
Because now I go to bed pretty early. I'm not up for too many concerts. But the time I came here recently, was it 3 years ago? My daughter, I had a very much I'm an old guy moment. My daughter came here for one of these YouTube artists shows.
Yes.
Some woman that just, you know, makes silly videos. And I was just standing at the back. And I was like, I remember when I turned around and... There were the dads at the back, and now I'm the dad at the back of the show. I think about going to shows all the time. I'll see it. I'm like, oh, like Elvis Costello's coming, and then I'm like, do I want to shell out the money for the tickets? You know what I mean? I mean, you're obviously you get a front row seat for all this stuff, but
you've got a connection for things now, so. Reach out.
All right. Well, I will. I don't know who you've got coming. But that's the other thing is I don't know who any of these acts are anymore. There was a time that you wouldn't know some of them, but then you know what I mean? But we joke, some of my friends and I joke now is that if you, when you go to the festival poster and you don't recognize the big names, then you're in trouble, right?
Well, I assure you that there are currently all of those future Van Halen's, Clapton's, Costello's.
They're playing now?
They're playing now.
All right. We're going to have to talk off mic then about who I should come see. Because like I said, dude, I just go to bed early.
I'm going to make you a list.
How do you stay up?
I don't very often.
I was going to say.
I'm usually in bed at regular time too, unless it's something super special.
Right.
Yeah.
You keep like 9 to 5 hours?
I keep 9 to 7 hours. Because we have to work with the West Coast.
Right.
It works a little bit longer.
Got it. That makes sense. So if something's a real, real big deal, you'll stick around.
I will. Yep.
What's the last show you stuck around for? Do you remember?
No, but I can tell you a big one that I did, a couple of them over the course of the year. we had a reunion show with a punk rock band called Avail.
Okay.
I don't know if you know them.
I do not know them.
That was a big deal. They had a date with Hot Water Music here, and I'm kind of a punk rock guy anyway.
Okay.
But coming up, we have a show with Descendants and the Circle Jerks.
Oh, wow.
Kind of the godfathers.
Oh, my goodness.
Punk rock.
Yeah.
And I'll be up for that one.
Okay. I did see the Buzzcocks, although I'm not sure if they were here or center stage. I have to check my list, but...
We're working on a date with them for later in the year. I don't know if they have something on sale now, but I don't think so.
Are they all still alive? Pete Shelley and the boys?
Yeah, they are.
God bless them. All the Ramones are gone. So heartbreaking.
Yeah.
That's. I'm really glad that I did see the Ramones, I think, 3 or 4 times when I was younger because, you know, they'll just never be anything. I mean, they really changed my... You talk about, like, the band that changed your life, is that I remember listening to them with my friend Adam, and it really just... You know, because it's not, nothing of that was on the radio, right? There was a lot of Bruce and Whitney Houston and Madonna on the radio, but there was nothing like the frickin' Ramones, right?
Yeah, they're probably more on the radio these days than they were in their heyday.
Right.
We were talking over the past couple of days, we were gathering some historic memorabilia, anything that we had around, and we had a piece of paper that was a signed receipt from a Nine Inch Nails show.
Right.
And we also found a contract from the first Nirvana gig.
Oh,
it was $400. And
you paid them $400?
We paid them $400 to play. Pulled up in a old white van, drums falling out the back of it.
Right. So they split $175 or whatever the math is on $400 divided by 3.
Yeah. And Dave Grohl has an audiobook that's out now, and he talks about it and mentions The Masquerade.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I did see them. Did they tour for In Utero? I think they might have before he passed. I think I saw them then. I definitely wasn't on the front end. I mean, I certainly didn't know about them. But here's interesting thing. When we saw the Ramones, it was the day that he died, or the day after.
Kirk.
Yeah. So it was April 5th, which is also my birthday, and he had died on the 4th of whatever year that was. Again, I don't know if that was the show here or somewhere else, but I remember Joey was like, this one goes out to Kurt Cobain, you know, one of those things. You have something new you're doing around here that they told me to come down and talk to you about.
yes, we do. We're opening a new venue next month here, also at Underground Atlanta in the Kenny's Alley Courtyard. It's going to be called Altar.
Not the Altar.
Altar.
Okay.
Yep. 250 cap with a kitchen, which is a real big deal because there's no food in the area currently.
Right.
And we're excited about it. It's also coincides with our 35th anniversary, so we're saying... Celebrating 35 years in Atlanta, we present Altar, a new stage space.
And is that something that you've been working on for a while? Like, hey, we want to have, we want to give people a food thing? Or
No, it kind of just fell into our laps. The space was formerly a comedy club that gave it a shot. And
What comedy club?
Atlanta Comedy Theater Underground.
Okay.
They've got a spot in Norcross that they've had forever.
Right.
That does real well.
Okay. Stand-up?
Stand-up.
Okay, because it sounds like comedy theater sounds like, I don't know, improv or something.
They probably had some improv nights, but they also have big-name comedians come through testing their material.
Right.
You know, you'll have a Chappelle drop in and do a set or whatever. But the space became available, and we saw an opportunity and took it over.
Did you go to shows, comedy shows back in the day? Because I don't have those listed.
But no.
You never went to the Punchline?
Show guy. No. I was always a music dude.
Yeah. I took my son. 99X had a thing last Sunday.
Okay.
I don't know if you heard about it. No?
I don't think so.
99X had it's their 2 years back, you know, from before. Like, hey, we're back. So I went up to meet a friend there. They played... this brewery, and I haven't been up to there because, like I live in the West End. I do everything ITP. Like, I never drive out there. So I got out there, and it was the old, not the old American Pie, but the old, what was across the street there?
This is up Roswell Road, 285?
Right outside 285.
I don't know. I remember American Pie, but I don't know what was across the street from it.
But yeah, that's where we did some damage back in those days. Where did you live during that time, during the 90s? Do you remember where you were living, or have you always lived down there?
I was in Little Five Points.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I'm currently not too far from you. I'm over on the west side in Sylvan Hills.
Okay. Well, then we are neighbors, sir. People ask me, here's the thing. So I lived in the West End, right across from those breweries, right?
Right.
Rose Circle Park and then all those breweries. But when I first moved there in 2015, nobody knew what the West End was. They thought I meant West Midtown,
right,
which I honestly don't really like as a term either. But now the people know where those breweries are. So if I say West End, they know that. However, I don't live there anymore. We moved. We bought a house closer to East Point. But I don't live in East Point, so I don't really live anywhere. But you know where I live, but they don't.
Wait, you bought a house in East Point, but you don't live there?
It's not in East Point.
Oh, okay.
If you leave my house and go right, you'll see a sign that says East Point, but we're not in East Point. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We're off Campbellton Road, shortly past the Oakland City MARTA station.
I was about to tell you, that's not Oakland City?
It's not. It's not Venetian Hills. It's anyway. Nobody know. If unless you know that hood, you don't really know. But if you know that hood, then
I know it.
I love the West Side. We'll probably stay there. Like, I've got three kids, and I've been saying to my wife, this house is only going to get bigger as they move out, right?
Sure.
So why would I ever have to move again?
There you have it. Yeah. We're definitely neighbors, though.
I was asking you about how this kind of came about when you guys decided that you needed a fourth venue or whatever you want to call it.
Well, we do, as I mentioned before, as a promotions company, we do so many shows in rooms of that size around town, whether it be the Vinyl stage at Center Stage or the Earl or Aisle 5 and Little Five Points, that there was definitely the need for us to have another one of that size that we kind of controlled. And the opportunity to serve food to these concert goers is a no-brainer. I mean, that's one of the biggest complaints or questions that we get is, what's there to eat? I would love to show up and get something before the show or after the show or during the show. So we're going to make a food service window out into Kenny's Alley so people who come to shows at Heaven, Hell, Purgatory can take a break and go get a burger.
Okay.
Or, whatever it may be.
I feel like it could go, if it gets like really swamped, it could be rough, right?
Yeah, it could. It could. I mean, we've kind of had a little preview of how it can be because for the longest time there was a hot dog stand and a pop-up taco stand that would open. So we could kind of gauge how long the line was going to be.
Okay.
But we won't really know till we start. All right. But yeah.
Is this place completed? Like, when does it open?
Mid-March.
Okay.
We still got a ways to go.
Okay. Can I see it, or is it not even in shape enough to, like, look at?
Yeah, you can stick your head in there when we're done.
All right, let's do that. All right, well, I always like to ask people some Atlanta favorites questions, since this is the Atlanta podcast, and we'll start with, sorry, I lost my train of thought there for a second. We'll start with, are you a Kroger guy or a Publix guy?
Man, I kind of split my time. I like the Publix experience, and I like the Kroger discount.
Okay. Are you a Dunkin' or a Starbucks guy?
Dunkin'.
Okay, why is that?
I don't know. Dunkin's the working man's coffee.
I think so, too. There's one there in the West End that I go to,
yep,
which, depending on the time of year, sometimes has really horrible staff, and the drive-through line will take you forever. And sometimes they get some good folks in there, and it's cooking.
Yeah, I don't know if you can even go in there anymore, but I think I most recently bought some gift cards around Christmas in there.
Well, coming out of COVID, they did that we're going to shut the doors almost all the time thing, and now they've slowly gotten away from that. It used to be like after 11, they would just lock the door and make you go through that god-awful drive-through line. But I think it's coming back around. And yeah, I know all the people in there. We go, I mean, they usually give my kids a free donut or two because we've been going there forever. Because let me ask you this. Even all those breweries, there's not a food I like. A lot of food I like over there. I like Boxcar. Do you know that one?
Yeah.
So that to me is the only one that's real. Do you know those guys, by the way? Do you know Craig and Eileen?
No, I don't. But
they're good people.
You ever hang out at Lean Draft House beside the Dunkin'?
I do not. I've been there once, I think.
Well, you missed your opportunity because they've closed.
When did they close?
shortly after the new year. I think Leo, the guy that owns it and owns the car wash behind it, sold it to a residential developer. But
so we're going to get more condos?
Townhomes.
Instead of more food?
Yep.
God damn it. What about across the street? You go to that spot across the street?
Occasionally.
Breakfast spot?
Occasionally.
A little pricey, but decent.
Yeah.
RIP the Lean Draft House.
For sure. It was my spot during COVID. We would come into the office here, just a couple of us, when everything was shut down, and do what little work there was to do. And I would stop there on the way home. You know, they did patio seating and all that kind of stuff. Just trying to spend a little money and help them survive it while we were trying to survive.
That was good of you.
Yeah.
Do you remember, since we're talking about this, do you remember like the first shows that you were like, that you had to cancel, whatever that second week of March was, that you were like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was surreal. And we thought, yeah, we're going to close for about 2 weeks.
Right, like we all did.
It's going to all be good. And then it was 2 months. And then it was, my God, what's going on here? Years worth of concerts canceling and many monies being refunded for tickets, you know, that people had purchased over the course of a year or so. Things kept getting rescheduled, you know, the can getting kicked down the road. And yeah, it was bad and it was weird.
Yeah, to try to explain to people the PTSD that we're all still suffering from, because it wasn't just, oh, we're stuck in our house, et cetera, et cetera. It's that it was the not knowing that I remember there was a good, I don't know, year where it was just like, is this ever going to be over? Are they ever going to cure this thing? I mean, we were just fucked so badly.
Yeah, it was wild. Or at least one good thing that I know of that came out of it is an organization that we're a member of called NEVA, which is the National Independent Venue Association. Once all the shows started canceling and we realized that this industry, the live music industry, was the first one to close, and since our business is packing bodies together, probably going to be the last one to reopen.
Right.
A group of like-minded venue operators around the country came together and started having weekly Zoom calls to talk about what everyone was going through and how they were getting by and how long could they survive, and turned that into fundraising efforts to spread among the members. And eventually it led to hiring a lobbyist, crafting legislation that eventually became the Save Our Stages Act, and it came through and distributed, you know, money that helped people survive.
So you had to give tickets back. What about, did you have to give like all the deposits back, or was that just like, hey guys, you're sorry, that's part of the deal?
For shows that were postponing, in theory, deposits to artists sat right where they were in the.
I meant deposits to you, like we're booking the room, and I assume that's how it works. They book the room and give you a deposit.
No, we contract with the artists themselves and we pay them, as opposed to the other way around. So we might have been sitting on, you know, X thousands of tickets sold for concerts that folks like yourself had purchased that now we had to give back.
Wait a minute. So everybody is a door deal?
They mostly have guarantees and then get extra money depending on how well the show does.
All right. Well, I just learned something. I assumed whether they're playing here or they're playing Mercedes-Benz, they say, is this date free? We now give you money like an event would,
That's not how it works.
Okay. Well,
artists are represented by agents.
Right.
And they reach out to promoters in various cities, of which we're one. And they might say, hey, we have Foo Fighters who are looking to play Atlanta on this date. Go find a venue. Here's how much money they're looking to be paid. You know.
And so it's your job to price the tickets such that you make some money and you can pay them.
Correct. And pay the expenses of the venue, the labor.
All right.
The
let's get to this one. I hadn't planned on asking this, but can we talk about the Ticketmasters of the world and how we can fix that then?
I don't think we have enough time to do that, but that's a whole another conversation. And the short version is my opinion, and the opinion of many, is that it's not the ticketing companies that are the problem, but mostly the scalpers and resellers who are utilizing technology to buy up the best seats and then throw them onto the secondary market at grossly inflated prices.
All right. Well, let's back up a little bit. Okay. So Once upon a time, again, for the younger listener, there was only Ticketmaster, and there was a couple of other whatever. But for the average person, whether you're going to see, you know, all those bands I named or a smaller artist at Cotton Club, like, tickets are available at the door and Ticketmaster.com. And back then, if the ticket was $20, the fee was $7, we complained. Like, yeah, it's another 30% of the ticket, right?
Right.
And then slowly, slowly, as online began, it was, now, wait a minute, I'm paying almost as much for the fees that I have for two tickets. Like, the show was $100, now I'm paying $160 with the fees and all that. And the artists were even saying, I think Pearl Jam or some others were like, well, we don't want to do that. We're not going to go through Pearl Jam. We're not going to go through Ticketmaster. So these secondary markets came out, I feel like, way later. Like, isn't Ticketmaster still to blame? No?
You're right that at one time they were the only game in town, and they're still the dominant ticketing company, but there are many, many others that operate in a very similar fashion.
Axis. Right.
Axis is one that's affiliated with a promotions company called AEG.
Right.
There's C-Tickets, E-Tix.
And those are all the ones that have resale.
No, those are primary ticketing companies that I've listed. Resale companies are like StubHub, Vivid Seats, SeatGeek, that kind of.
Okay. But once upon a time. Okay, so how are scalpers getting their hands on advanced tickets?
They use bot technology to somehow monitor when events go on sale and kind of bombard the selling process to get those tickets and throw them onto the secondary platforms.
Right. All right. Well, definitely, we can talk about that more later, I guess.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not a concert goer that much these days, so it's not a problem for me. I go to the occasional sporting event. And the point of the reseller was to protect the buyer, right? So you're not buying fake tickets. You're not, you know, getting scalped, as the term, right? But now you're saying it's just as bad as anything else.
It is. If you're purchasing through whatever ticketing company is affiliated with a venue that's their ticketing provider, you're guaranteed that you're getting a real ticket.
Right.
It can go up on these resale sites, and you don't know.
Right.
You don't know till you show up.
Right. Yeah, and I remember a show my daughter saw at – see, I always get it wrong now because I know the Roxy is now the Coca-Cola Roxy, which is different than
– right. At that Buckhead Theater was
right.
The original
she
Roxy.
Saw, she, I took her to a show there, and there was a whole – I had to buy her a ticket, and she was like, whatever, 14 at the time. So I wanted to make sure she wasn't spending my money on some fake nonsense. But anyhow, so we went through Kroger, Publix, we got all over the place. We were talking about Starbucks and Dunkin'. If I asked you to rank the Atlanta sports teams, Braves, Falcons, Hawks, United, how would you rank those teams?
Braves, Falcons, Hawks, United.
Just like that?
Just like that.
A lot of folks are down on the Braves for moving. You don't care? You don't mind?
No, I don't mind. I'm a big Braves guy. It was convenient for me living downtown with them being right here in the backyard.
Right.
But their move also gave Georgia State University a great facility, and I think they're over time going to make great use of it.
Well, the irony is of all those years of never getting an area, they build the new stadium, they build Turner Field, it still looked like the hood, and now it's Castleberry Hill. Now it's a bunch of you can get a hot dog, you can get a chicken sandwich, you can get a burger.
Well, you know, the Braves promised that's what it was going to turn into for, you know, decades. They had that, I can't recall what it was, but it was some sort of fan experience that was going to cause that neighborhood to develop and be a fun place like it is now. And it is ironic that they pack their bags and go, and now Summer Hills.
Summer Hill, what did I call it?
Castleberry.
Whatever. All the hills. Castleberry here is closer to the stadium. It's closer to
it's over by Mercedes Benz,
right? Now I ask this of everybody, but this will be a very interesting answer for you. I ask everybody, what is the best show you've ever seen in Atlanta? What is the best concert you've ever seen?
Oh my God!
I know it's hard to ask because you've been to the mall, but I do ask everybody that question. And you can give me top three if you want because of the job you do.
My favorite concert experience that I've been through was the second Wrecking Ball Festival that we threw in 2016 in Old Fourth Ward Park, which was our farewell show to the old building. And it featured artists like Quicksand, Dinosaur Jr., American Nightmare, a bunch of the punk rock stuff and alternative rock stuff that I like, L7. that was the best concert weekend ever.
You like those bands. You're not listening to 99X these days because they're playing all that stuff?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, I'm surprised you didn't. They were talking about this big event for like 2 weeks straight, so that's why I thought maybe you'd heard of it.
Oh, got it.
Dinosaur Jr., I haven't heard that band forever. Hang on, there was another question. Let me pull up. I mostly do this off the top of my head, but once in a while. Where the heck are these questions? I used to have a big list of Atlanta questions, and I can't find them. Let's see. Nope, that's not that. You know, do you have an app that you use for keeping track of things? Do you handwrite notes?
I keep a handwritten list, and we also use Todoist.
Todoist? I like this. What do you call it? Notes app?
The basic notes app for what to get at the grocery store. And
yes,
I use that, but internally for work we use Todoist. We use Slack.
I can't find it. I'm so disappointed that I can't find this thing. Hang on 1 second. We'll edit around this part for sure. Okay, here we go. Found one. complete this sentence. You ready? I take MARTA blank.
Nowhere.
A very common answer. Not even to the airport. To the airport's a common answer.
Tend to drive to the airport.
Okay.
Yeah. Or a rideshare.
Well, I gotta say, now that Lyft and Uber exist, I'm big on that. But I will often Uber to the airport. Then when I come home, I'll take the train and get off right there, and my wife will come get me.
Well, you've got Oakland City right beside your house,
right? Oh, what is your go-to order at the Waffle House?
The sausage hash brown bowl. Add tomatoes, jalapenos, and an extra slice of cheese.
Now, I will say the bowl is my favorite. I don't add that stuff, though. I just add a little hot sauce.
Yeah.
Old days, before the bowl existed, it was just chicken sandwich plate, basic hash browns.
Pork chops, too. Yeah. I like the pork chops.
Yeah. I'm trying to watch my figure, so.
I don't know that they have the pork chops anymore.
They have to. What is your current favorite place to eat in the city of Atlanta?
As mentioned, I enjoyed I enjoyed Lean Draft House. I like El Ponce for Mexican.
Okay.
I kind of go up and down Memorial Drive here. I like Das Barbecue for barbecue.
Right.
That's a good spot.
I know that guy. I interviewed that guy. Great food.
I eat burgers at Grindhouse.
Right. Also interviewed that guy. I'm a big Grindhouse fan. My kids also love Grindhouse.
And I'm looking forward to the food hall there at the Lee and White Breweries.
Yeah.
Which has been under construction for like 3 years or something.
Give you an update, guys. Because I live right there. And I run. I'm a big runner. I used to run behind the Beltline there when it was just dirt, and I kind of really enjoyed it. It was my little piece of. There was a homeless guy that lived back there that would yell at you. It was great. The breweries, I don't feel like do a great job with food. Like I said, I like Boxcar. So this food hall, quote unquote. So they did open a coffee shop there called Costa.
I haven't been in, but okay. Seen it. Yeah.
Right. Decent, right? Costa is kind of like Starbucks. And then behind it is the food hall, and all they've got right now is there's like a poke bowl place and a hot dog place, but like nothing that you would like. Hey, let's go eat at the food hall. So supposedly stuff is coming.
Yeah, I want a bunch of choices.
Right,
go in there and be kind of overwhelmed. I want to try. No,
yeah,
wait, I want to try.
Yeah, it's not happening yet. So I don't know what the holdup is.
Disappointing.
I know. It's West. We don't get a lot of love on the West Side.
I see tons of cars out there.
Well, a lot of cars at the breweries, and a lot of cars go to that climbing gym. Now, when they opened a climbing gym, it's called. How's it called?
I know what you mean.
When they opened that, I thought, well, that's not anything this neighborhood needs. But clearly, people from
climbing,
people not that live in that neighborhood, but that come from wherever. Because the only other one that I can think of is that Stone Summit way up 85. And so I guess it's for all the people that live in town that don't want to drive up there. Because I thought, this is not a neighborhood that needs a climbing gym. You know what I mean? This is a neighborhood that needs food. So, and the last question I always ask is, who should I have next on the Atlanta podcast?
Maybe somebody affiliated with the World Cup.
Oh,
coming to Atlanta.
That's a great one.
Somebody that could talk about that process and what I just heard yesterday that we're going to get one of the semifinal matches in addition to seven preliminaries or something like that.
So right.
That might be somebody cool to talk to.
I think that's a great call. You've given me some ideas. Now, they announced us as a city I think a year ago, but now it's been announced like what we're actually going to get. And I got to be honest, I'm not really, I'm with you, United on the bottom of my list too. I'm not really on the soccer train, but I think it's cool. And if we get millions of people come to our city, that's good for us.
Same. All right. I think so too.
All right. Tell people how they can find out more about all the wonderful things the Masquerade does.
You can visit our website at www.masquerade.atlanta.com. You can visit our Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, socials. Yeah, that's how you do it. We hope to see you at a show soon.
Are you in charge of the TikTok?
I am not.
How did I know that?
Different generation.
All right. I'm going to go. Let's go check out this new spot.
Let's do it.
All right.
Enjoyed talking.
Thanks, man. And that was my chat with Greg. Go check out the Masquerade online. They've got shows scheduled out for several months ahead. Plus, check out the new food spot, Altar. Can't wait to try out some of their goods. More fun interviews from the ATL coming your way. Love you. Miss you. Mean it. I've got to run.
Every day, we rise, challenging ourselves to work for what we believe in. At U.S. Border Patrol, protecting our borders is more than a job. It's a calling. Agents answer the call, working together to keep our country and communities safe. If you are ready for a new mission, join U.S. Border Patrol and go beyond. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.